Morning. Welcome to the October 23rd, 2022 edition of Liberation Station Radio Show. I'm Chris Steiner, and the site is theliberationstation.com. Streaming live at Facebook at facebook.com/wearechangetampa. Good. Streaming live with a good audio check, although the video is fuzzy for some reason, and I don't know why. So I might just end up posting the video in higher quality after the show from the Skype recording. And I just tried clearing it as we allowed the bumper music to play for an extended chorus. Then I was trying to clean off the lens with a tissue because I was adjusting it before the show. I thought I might have smudged it up, but it didn't seem to do anything, and it turned fuzzy just the moment I went streaming. So I think it might be a little bit one more thing Facebook is sabotaging. So difficult to get on Facebook lately to stream live, to get it to connect to my camera, or to just getting over so many hurdles. So I apologize, folks, if that's the reason the last two shows and other recent shows have been posted from recording rather than the Facebook live stream. So I see we have a couple of people watching on Facebook Live. I'm going to share it over to the Republic Broadcasting Network Facebook page, facebook.com/republicbroadcasting, in just a few moments. And join in the chat room over at theliberationstation.com. In the listen/archives page is the chat room. Listen/archives page is the third one down. Or you can just go to theliberationstation.com. Chatango.com. Theliberationstation.chatango.com. TheLiberationStation.chatango.com. Sorry, I'm getting distracted while I'm getting ready to cross-post this over at the Republic Facebook page. And we'll get the first clip rolling as I join in the chat room and share this on the Republic page and so many other pages. We're here with you every Sunday, 10 a.m. to noon Central, 11 a.m. to 1 Eastern. And we'll start with America's Frontline Doctors, the America's Frontline News Roundup from 2 days ago, October 21st, 2022. So please play that clip.
I'm Mordechai Soames, and this is your weekly roundup from America's Frontline News. 19 attorneys general are launching an investigation into America's six largest banks that are heavily involved in environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, a way of grading companies, countries, and people based on how well they conform. The more environmentally friendly or racially inclusive a company purports to be, the more worthy of investment. If a company's ESG score is below certain thresholds, they are not to be invested in at all. The attorneys general served civil investigative demands to Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and Wells Fargo, all of whom are involved with the United Nations so-called Net Zero Banking Alliance. The project's aim is for the world's largest banks to include only ESG-compliant companies in their investment and lending portfolios by the year 2050. Meanwhile, the same six banks will also participate in a climate scenario exercise conducted by the Federal Reserve. According to a statement by the Federal Reserve Board, six of the nation's largest banks will participate in a pilot climate scenario analysis exercise, purportedly designed to enhance the ability of supervisors and firms to measure and manage climate-related financial risks. The simulation will test the resilience of the banks under different hypothetical climate scenarios. The exercise will commence early 2030 and is expected to finish at the end of the year. While the nature of these climate-related financial risks is unclear, the Fed statement claims the exercise will be exploratory in nature and does not have capital consequences. The Federal Reserve Board offered no further clarity, only making reference to undefined variables such as so-called climate pathways. The climate exercise may validate predictions that banks and financial institutions will become the new legislatures as they force individuals and companies into ESG compliance, with J.P. Morgan Chase's website stating, "ESG matters are an important consideration in how we do business." BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, who heads one of the world's largest investment firms, was candid about how his company approaches ESG, stating in 2017, "You have to force behaviors, and at BlackRock, we're forcing behaviors." Last week, BlackRock was downgraded by UBS analyst Brennan Hawken, who slashed the company's stock price from $700 to $585 and changed its rating from buy to neutral. In a statement, Hawken said, "We are downgrading BlackRock to neutral based on environmental pressure to earnings and risk from the firm's ESG positioning." A new mobile app feature from Australia's Commonwealth Bank tracks the so-called carbon footprints of its customers based on their transactions. The app then analyzes the customer's carbon footprint, including how many trees were claimed destroyed by the customer's living life. The customer is notified within the app and is offered the opportunity to pay a fee to offset their alleged harm to the environment. As for the fee customers are offered by Commonwealth Bank to atone for changing the weather, it is unclear who is the end recipient, what it is used for, if any individual or business profits from this fee, or exactly how the fee is used to rectify the environment. Neither Commonwealth Bank nor app developer Kogo responded to America's Frontline News' request for answers. Psychiatric physician Dr. Aaron Heriati said, "The biomedical security state will soon have the infrastructure in place for policies including digital IDs and central bank digital currencies." He concluded, "These will be tied to digital health passport systems already tested and developed during the pandemic." Leicester police last week urged UK citizens to report people for, quote, misnaming those who claim to have changed their gender by referring to them by their previous name. In August, a decorated British war veteran was arrested for malicious communications after police received a complaint about one of his social media posts. The arresting officer explained the arrest was, quote, because somebody has been caused, obviously, anxiety based on your social media post. That is why you've been arrested. Meanwhile, the House of Commons Tuesday passed a sweeping new surveillance bill to electronically tag protesters who have not been convicted of a crime. The bill, which passed by 276 to 231 votes, aims to grant police and courts more power to prevent protests and the ability to electronically monitor protesters with an ankle tag before being tried in a court of law. While introducing the bill, former Home Secretary Priti Patel said, "What we have seen in recent years is a rise in criminal, disruptive, and self-defeating guerrilla tactics carried out by a selfish few in the name of protest." ReclaimTheNet.org reports the bill still needs to pass through the House of Lords and also requires a royal assent before becoming law. The Daily Telegraph Sunday ran an expose that found the UK's National Health Service has been requiring newborn deaths to be recorded as stillbirths. The report prompted accusations the NHS was trying to avoid scrutiny, as stillbirths require no coroner investigation, whereas newborn deaths do. The investigation found 6 children who died before they left hospital were wrongly described as stillborn. Several of the children lived for minutes and one lived for 5 days. In one case, an obstetrician reported being pressured by an NHS manager to say a baby he had delivered was stillborn in order to be loyal to the trust. OBGYN Dr. James Thorpe last week called the COVID-19 injection side effects on pregnant women the greatest disaster in the history of obstetrics. Speaking on Dr. Drew Pinsky's Ask Dr. Drew podcast, Dr. Thorpe discussed miscarriages, fetal cardiac arrest, fetal malformation, fetal cardiac arrhythmia, and interuterine growth restrictions caused by placental complications. Dr. Thorpe, who specializes in high-risk obstetrics, said it's completely against science, adding that he will fight it until his last breath. Dr. Thorpe continued, "I have a lot of emotional, moral, and ethical trauma from having to see what I've seen, and the devastation and destruction of my pregnant women, my preborn children, my newborn children, and women of reproductive age. I'm very, very angry at this administration and the whole political situation where we as physicians have a formal gag order put on us." Meanwhile, the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices Wednesday voted unanimously to include the COVID-19 injection as part of the Vaccines for Children, or VFC, program. Responding to the vote, America's Frontline Doctors founder, Dr. Simone Gold, said, "Despite thousands of reported adverse events and debilitating reactions like myocarditis, the CDC panel unanimously voted to add COVID-19 mRNA shots to the recommended childhood vaccine schedule in the United States. This is truly shocking." A new study using data from 40 national studies has concluded that COVID-19 is less fatal by a factor of 10 than once believed. The study's lead author is Professor John Ioannidis of Stanford University. The study's authors say the information is important because 94% of the global population is younger than 70 years and 86% is younger than 60 years. According to the study, the danger of dying from COVID for the average person below the age of 70 is orders of magnitude lower than the danger of dying in a car accident. For more top news and analysis, go to our website at americasfrontlinenews.com. You've been listening to Mordechai Sohn.
And that's it for last edition of America's Frontline News from America's Frontline Doctors. You can pick that up at americasfrontlinenews.com. And your calls are welcome, although we're going to play a long clip here. This is the Jackson report from the last edition of The High Wire with Del Bigtree. Last Thursday, October 20th, 2022. You can catch them over at thehighwire.com. And your calls will take after about a half hour here of playing this clip. You can reach us at 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And toll free 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Please don't use that toll free number unless your calling plan doesn't allow for the toll number 512-248-8252. And please donate at Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org on the donate page. Has all your options. Keep us going and growing, such a jewel of a network that Spirit is blessed to be here all these years. And I see the Facebook live stream was just ended for without explanation from Facebook, so I'm not going to restart that because I want to have the whole show unedited, and we'll post that after the show. So if you want to give me some feedback in the chat, the only way to do that this morning is through the chat room on the listen/archives page at theliberationstation.com, and get into some more news later on, getting into some studies on recent studies, myocarditis, pericarditis being implicated directly by certain studies, and so surprising to see that actually in scientific published literature. First, we'll get over now to clip number two. This is episode 290, October 20th, 2022, of The High Wire with Del Bigtree, interviewing Jeffrey Jackson, talking about how the CDC's recent approval of COVID shots, putting them on the recommended childhood schedule, is illegal, and the gain of function, or I guess you should call it gain of dysfunction being disease, so they call it gain of function. I guess they look on the cup is half empty side of it when they're engineering these viri, and they came up with a hybrid of Omicron and the original Wuhan strain, and made it less virulent, less deadly. I mean, yeah, which is virulent, less harmful, virulent, deadly, same thing, than the Wuhan strain. So they claim, well, we weren't engaged in gain of function research, but when you look at it, as Jeffrey Jackson explains, it's really not a reduction from 100% to 80%. It's an increase from 0 to 80%, and therefore it is illegal. So we'll get into that and all this news that I just couldn't bear repeating on my own. I think that they do such a great job. We'll show it up on the screen on the video of all the references, the studies, any graphs, charts, images will be on the screen, as it's not just the last edition of The High Wire with Del Bigtree in audio. It's also in video, so look forward to seeing that on the Republic Broadcasting Facebook page. And I shared the video, but I'm going to go ahead and delete it since Facebook cut it short. And let's see, I'll get ready now there, Sam, in the control room, when you're ready to play that clip number two, and I'm all ready to sync it up. Whenever you're ready, please play that clip.
Jeffrey Jackson and the Jackson Report. All right, Jeffrey, thank you for joining me. You're in studio. We had a sense that this was going to be the outcome at ACIP. Unfortunately, just as the things were lining up, and we had, we put out calls to people to write into the CDC. We all took part in that opportunity to try and get them to stop making this, I think, grave error. I think this will go down as one of the biggest catastrophic errors in science. So, this really, you know, in many ways, I think it, we saw this starting to, you know, ramp up really with an announcement that Biden made. I think what makes the context of this so important is looking at what President Biden said just a few weeks ago about the state of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at that first.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape.
So it's amazing, right? We had just a few weeks ago the President of the United States saying the pandemic is over, right? Which I think for most people means great. We can let down our shoulders. This entire ridiculous charade we've been a part of has ended, and we can all move on with the rest of our lives. But right. There was a shift recently.
Yeah, just weeks after that comment by the president, we have Javier Becerra from HHS. He's the secretary, the head there. He came out and renewed the public health emergency that is the COVID-19 public health emergency. So kind of going against what Biden was saying. So now we're still in a public health emergency. And of course, one of the reasons for that public health emergency here.
We have that right here. Let me go ahead and read that. Renewal of determination that a public health emergency exists. Remember, this is coming from the Biden administration. So he's not going against it. Biden must be going along with it. As a result of the continued consequences, the coronavirus disease 2019 pandemic, on this date and after consultation with public health officials as necessary, I, Javier Becerra, Secretary of Health and Human Services, pursuant to the authority vested in me under Section 319 of the Public Health Service Act, do hereby renew effective October 13th, 2022, just a few days ago, the January 31st, 2020 determination by former Secretary Alex Azar that he previously renewed on April 21st, 2020, July 23rd, 2020, October 2nd, 2020, January 7th, 2021, and that I renewed on April 15th, 2021, July 19th, 2021, October 15th, 2021. You get it, all of those dates, that a public health emergency exists and has existed since January of 2020. Right. So it's a far cry. I mean, I don't understand how you can say a pandemic is over, but we're still in an emergency. It's like, you know, it doesn't make any sense. But the writing was on the wall there, right?
Right.
Because we're talking about what happened. What would have happened had they not renewed this emergency use authorization?
Well, the biggest thing, especially in the context of what we're talking about right now, the emergency use goes away. They don't renew that. All vaccinations under emergency use authorization end on the day that vaccination or that renewal does not happen. So we're talking about no more EUA vaccinations. So everything that ACIP just voted for the kids, all the kids' vaccines are still under EUA. So like you said, for the first time, we have an EUA vaccine that's put on a recommended schedule for the child routine childhood schedule for the CDC. So those would be gone. There would be no chance for those to be put on there. So this.
Well, I mean, they essentially would have had to take then an unapproved, unrecommended, I mean, and then put it on the schedule. Essentially, all those childhood vaccines would have disappeared the moment that we removed the emergency and thus the emergency use authorization. So it was clear they were bridging a gap because it made no sense. We don't have children in hospitals. Everyone knows Omicron is a nothing burger now, which is great. That they've said everyone around the world is going to have to learn to live with it. This is a good form variant to be catching to achieve herd immunity, which they're starting to admit a little bit more and more is quite robust, even though we've pointed out that the science is there. But it would have been very hard to have a product that has no approval whatsoever, lost its emergency use, and then say we're going to take this completely unapproved product and put it on the schedule. So it seemed to us they were preparing for what just took place today.
Right. And as you mentioned, what just took place today, we have a 15-0 vote from the ACIP members of the committee. And Reuters headline just came out here. The headline states, U.S. CDC advisors approve adding COVID shots to vaccine schedules. Now, this is for children and for adults, too. That slipped in there as well.
Really?
But the children are the ones under the EUA. So that's why this is such a big deal. So just yesterday, a lot of the headlines were saying this already happened. Because this is misinformation, because people are saying this already happened. Yesterday, that same committee, the same members, 15-0, voted for something called vaccination for kids. And I'm going to put that in quotation marks, because that's a program for kind of underserved communities. So the uninsured, the underinsured, people like that. So that's a kind of a subset.
I saw a post saying, oh, it's been approved. We're not going to be able to go into schools. And I was like, wait a minute, we're still waiting for that vote to happen today.
Right.
The misunderstanding was this was for the underserved community, which is still a large, you know, a portion of children that deserve the same rights as everyone else. And there was some corrections of that, but it was only a correction that would have to last for 24 hours because 24 right. hours later, they actually did have the vote that everyone thought yesterday's vote was all about.
Yeah, and that distinction's right on the CDC's website. They have a chart here which tells the distinctions between the two. And if you want to look at that, you can go right to the CDC. But, you know, what we're talking about here is we're talking about still the conversation is the COVID threat to children has never really been a major threat.
Right.
I mean, we have even Johnny Ioannidis, he's talking about in his study, it's well under 1%. And we're looking at that here.
Right. So Johnny Ioannidis, literally described as the world's leading epidemiologist in the world. This was from his study back in 2021. Look at the death rate for 0 to 19, the group that just had this vaccine mandated. They won't be able to go to school. The death rate was 0.0027%. You don't have to be good at math to know that that rounds to zero.
Right. And, you know, what's interesting about that is that study was taken during what we're told was a more virulent ancestral Wuhan strain.
Right.
We're told the Omicron strain is much more mild. So, you know,
it's not even that high. I mean, we're probably adding a few more zeros behind the decimal point.
Exactly. Exactly. And so let's look at another angle of this. You know, we were talking about VAERS and all the underreporting on that. Let's look at open VAERS. So we have, this is the reporting in the backdrop of this. This is what they're voting, and this is how many people have reported to VAERS. And of interest to this is the myocarditis cases. We've shown this before. In 2021 and 2022, when the vaccine rollout came, the myocarditis cases jumped up greatly.
53,000 right there, 53,114 at the bottom of your screen. I'll also point out 31,470 reported deaths, the highest reports of deaths for any vaccine in history. In fact, if you took all the vaccines, mm-hmm. combined them together, and all of the over 20 years of VAERS reporting, we do not have 31,000 deaths is now being reported just for this one singular vaccine. So the idea that there's no alarm here, there's no red flag, we should just go guns blazing forward with this untested product and mandate on children is outrageous. But let's get into that myocarditis, because VAERS, yeah. I know that just came up. Point out what we were just showing in the VAERS report there.
Yeah, so we have that myocarditis on that yeah. chart. We see in 2021, 2022, when that vaccine rollout happened, you see a gigantic spike. Now, notice yeah. before that, those are all the other vaccinations that are really on the childhood schedule. Not much going on from 2010 to 2020, but as soon as they rolled out that vaccine, especially in younger kids, younger boys, the mRNA shots, right. the myocarditis is a problem.
Just while we're looking at this, everyone, I just want you to, and some of you may be brand new, because I know that this issue today is going to drive you to watching the High Wire for the first time. Myocarditis, swelling of the hearts in children, all the vaccines put together from 2010 to 2020, those were the reports that came into this VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, where we report vaccine injury if we're injured by them. Look what happens in 2021 and 2022 upon this brand new vaccine entering the market. It skyrockets through the roof, thousands of reports for myocarditis, and yet the CDC says nothing to see here. I mean, it defies all reason.
Right, and when you read some of the scientific literature, the researchers that are doing the studies, there's almost a scientific consensus, if you will, that VAERS is an underreported system. They yes. say that in the scientific research that we've looked at here on this show.
Yeah.
But now let's look at the ACIP's own committee slides from last year. In the summer, they were voting on the EUA for the kids for the vaccination, and they were looking at myocarditis. This is an actual slide. And this was only a seven-day risk window. So imagine, you're only going to say 7 days. After 7 days, we're not going to look anymore. So in those 7 days, you see here in red, let's look at the males on the right side. 12 to 17 years old, that top line, we expected 0 to 4 myocarditis or pericarditis cases. They observed 128. The next
after line. Vaccination.
After
so the vaccination clearly raised your risk of myocarditis, expected 4, 128, you know, incredible jump.
Yeah. And then so 18 to 24 years old, expected 1 to 8. They observed 219. This is following the
That's
two
as
dose.
That's as high as a 200% increase. It's incredible.
Yes, yeah. yes. And so we're continuing on this. We're seeing it in the studies as well. There's a study out of Thailand that we just reported on. This received a lot of attention from the media, and I think it's important to wrap it back around here. They randomly took 314 kids in Thailand, just randomly picked them out. And they looked at what happened to these kids after the Pfizer vaccination as far as their cardiovascular events. And it says here in the study, this prospective cohort study enrolled students from two schools aged 13 to 18 years who received the second dose of the BNT162b2. That's Pfizer's mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. Data including, now, this was a robust reporting here. Data including demographics, symptoms, vital signs, ECG, echocardiograms, and cardiac enzymes were collected at baseline. That's basically day zero, day 3, day 7, and day 14, which is optional, using case record forms. What did they find? This is directly from the study. They said the most common cardiovascular effects were tachycardia, 7.64%, shortness of breath, 6.64%, palpitation, 4.32%, chest pain, 4.32%, wow, and hypertension, 3.99%. Seven participants, 2.33%, exhibited at least one elevated cardiac biomarker or positive lab assessments. Cardiovascular effects, here we go, were found in 29.24% of patients, ranging from tachycardia, palpitation, and myopericarditis. Myopericarditis was confirmed in one patient after vaccination. So you're telling me a therapeutic for a child is going to cause nearly 30% of them to have cardiovascular effects. Any cardiologist or doctor out there would never do this under other circumstances.
And of course, we've had Dr. Peter McCullough, the world-renowned leading heart doctor in the world, published more than any other heart doctor in the world, has come out against this vaccine for exactly these issues. And remember, we're talking about a study of 300 children. When we hear about vaccines, we've been always told vaccine injuries, one in a million. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they're really being honest, they'll say one in 100,000. You never really hear one in 10,000. We're talking out of 300 kids, 29.4% of them, you know, nearly 30% of them had some form, one form of another, of a heart issue after vaccination.
Right.
That is, why would you do this to your children? For, as we pointed out, a 0% risk of death from the virus itself.
Yeah, and there's a couple stories competing here to maybe why this was happening, why ACIP did this.
Okay.
So understand, there's a headline that just happened about a month ago, and it's talking about casting these vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer's vaccines, into the free market. Up until now, these have been subsidized by the U.S. government with our taxpayer money, funded these vaccine rollouts. So this is the headline out of Fierce Pharma talking about that. It says, no more free vaccines. U.S. plots move to private market in 2023, setting up market clash between Pfizer and Moderna. It says here, starting from January 2023, HHS won't have enough federal funds to support further distributions. Donald Connell, HHS's Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, said. So what better way to create a commercial market than to kind of punt this to the states, have the states mandate it in schools. Now every kid has to take this to get into schools. You know how that goes. There's your market. It just pops up like that.
And it almost gives you a sense of the types of backroom deals that are going on here. Don't worry, even when we stop paying you, we will suddenly force through an authorization that will force everybody to go to you in the marketplace and then pay you themselves. I mean, this is insane. And with the show we have coming up, I mean, you know, I don't want to give it away, but what's going on in Europe, an absolute nuclear bomb has gone off in the investigation of the Pfizer vaccine specifically. And in light of that, what we're going to talk about, to see us making this choice, the United States of America, it is so mind-blowing and shows such, like, catastrophically different perspectives on what is happening in the world today around this virus, around this vaccine. It really, it's why I said I think this day you just couldn't have more wrapped around this story.
And we'll pause it right there. Be right back. Mission Station Radio Show. Chris Steiner. Also welcome. Stay tuned. The FDA said it's safe for me. The drug companies claim that it's made for me. And the government, they're gonna pay for me.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Welcome to the revolution. All the walls are breaking down. It's time you had a taste of losing. Time the tables turned around. A glimpse of a recognition, but it's too little, it's too late. And what you thought was your best decision just became your worst mistake. What I mean is wiser, what I mean is stronger, what I mean is a fighter.
We're back here at Liberation Station Radio Show, and we'll continue now with the last edition of the High Wire with Del Bigtree, the Jackson Report. Jeffrey Jackson, intrepid reporter, his regular appearance this time in studio. Just about another 15 minutes left of this clip, and then we can take your calls at 512-248-8252, 512-248-8252, and toll free 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. And this is the longest clip that we have to play. We have some shorter clips in the future on the show, the future today, that is. We always try to play clips so that I don't want to be the one talking and giving the information. I don't want it to be a talk at you show so much as those giving it from the horse's mouth, and those who say it at least as good, or if not better, than I could. So that's how I esteemed Jeffrey Jackson and, of course, Mel Bigtree, asking hard questions and winning so many successes over at the Informed Consent Action Network, ICANDecide.org. So let's see, we're ready to resume that clip, Sam. So when you're ready, please roll it.
Right, and let's jump now. We're talking about vaccines and all the issues surrounding vaccines that we're continuing to discover. The same thing is happening with the antiviral Paxlovid.
Okay.
Now, if we remember, in December of last year, 2021, the FDA approved Paxlovid. This was the headline from their own website. You can see the regulatory approval here. Coronavirus update, FDA authorizes first oral antiviral for treatment of COVID-19. Now, what's interesting about this is on the back of that story, we know that the year prior to that, there was an intense battle going on. Hydroxychloroquine had come out as an antiviral. And you saw the WHO swoop in, give tons of money for studies where they packed the studies with
I mean, let's be clear. We had Ford Medical Center do a powerful study, one of the greatest research centers in America, coming forward and saying our study shows a 50% reduction in death amongst those that receive hydroxychloroquine. That should have been it. That should have been the story. A product, hydroxychloroquine, is being used all around the world in people who aren't even in good health that suffer from malaria. No problems there. No problems in all the other uses that are off-label here in the United States of America. But all of a sudden, Tony Fauci thinks there's a problem with using this because it could cause some sort of heart arrhythmia, I think, was the entire excuse. I mean, literally took this product out of the hands of doctors like Dr. Paul Merrick, who has been on our show, who was leading his ICU, having a 50% also better result using products like hydroxychloroquine. We're going to talk about ivermectin in a second. And so this was literally ripped out of the hands of doctors for the first time ever, where a bureaucratic agency like FDA made it impossible for a doctor in the middle of a virus that they said they knew nothing about. Well, doctors aren't allowed to use what appears to be working in trials and studies and in hospitals all around the world.
Right.
And then so they did. Yeah. You're about to talk about the study they did get behind.
Yeah, the studies they did get behind. They were using potentially lethal doses.
Right.
They were starting the therapies late. As we know with antivirals, you need to get on that right when you start showing symptoms.
Yeah. But sabotaged hydroxychloroquine with lethal doses being used, I believe, is over 2,000 milligrams being used of hydroxychloroquine in the Solidarity trial and the Recovery trial, when the doctors using it were using 400 milligrams, at most 600 milligrams a day. I think it was 2,400 in one of these trials. Literally four times and what is known as a lethal dose to make their point so they could pull it off the market. I mean, really, really horrific stuff.
And it didn't even stop there, if you remember. Right. We have the fraudulent data collection from this shadowy company called Surgisphere.
Right.
That was published in The Lancet. The Lancet had to retract that. It was being called one of the biggest retractions of the past decade.
Yeah.
That was complete and utter disaster.
You had like an adult model on the internet that was a part of the company and a science fiction writer that had put that entire fraudulent piece together. And that's what Tony Fauci ran with. And so, obviously, attack on ivermectin.
Yeah, ivermectin, they saw kind of what happened, the attack profile, if you will, with how they looked at hydroxychloroquine. So they kind of decentralized that. Doctors all around the world were dosing their patients. Actually, cities were dosing patients in Brazil, other places in South America, and they were having wildly successful results.
Yeah.
Obviously, this has been going, ivermectin is very cheap. It's a repurposed antiviral. It's
won the Nobel Prize for Medicine in human beings.
Right.
Even though all the media tried to say it was a horse deworming pill.
Right.
No, it had won the Nobel Prize for how brilliant it was in using humans around the world.
Right, and the safety profile is absolutely
the best there
impeccable.
Is.
Yes.
I mean, so many doctors saying you ivermectin has no cross-reactivity with other drugs that we can see. Literally one of the safest drugs we'd ever see.
Yes, and that story led to the book by Dr. Peter Corey called The War on Ivermectin.
Which we are going to be releasing, I think, within the next 30 days or so.
Right, so now let's look at the current headlines. Remember, Paxlovid has been out for well over a year.
Okay.
This is the go-to therapy
right.
of
so
every hospital.
So we trashed those.
Yes.
But Paxlovid's our shining star. This is what we're going to trust in.
Yep, you're walking into an ER, you're walking into your doctor's office with symptoms, first couple days, you're going on Paxlovid. This has been given to, countless millions of people. We had the president taking it. We had Anthony Fauci himself taking it.
Don't I remember that both of them had the bounce back effect, too, where they said to have cleared, they went back in public, and then they're back in bed days later because they had a rebound effect that was being pointed out by Paxlovid?
Yeah, and that was found afterwards. You know, that's what something they found, the Paxlovid rebound. This was something that apparently now was common, and now the media had to smooth that out a little bit because you're getting the symptoms again. But now listen to this is an article in CNN, nonetheless. This is a big warning. They're finding out there's some big drug-to-drug interactions that they're calling not just mild, severe. Here's the headline out of CNN. It says here, COVID-19 treatment Paxlovid can interact with common heart medications, doctors warn. Now, this was from a study, and this is what they said. The review paper says that interactions between Paxlovid and certain blood thinners can cause an increased risk of bleeding. So we're talking about the opposite of what the blood thinners are supposed to do. Interactions between Paxlovid and some cholesterol medications, such as statins, can be toxic to the liver, and interactions between Paxlovid and certain blood pressure medications can cause low blood pressure, flushing, and swelling. This is a big, big deal. And this review study was so important that the authors of the study put out their own press release saying, hey, doctors, you need to be concerned about this now. This isn't going to get buried in a medical journal. And so check this out. This is what they said. This was the actual press release. COVID-19 drug Paxlovid may interact with common heart medications. And in there, they list a bunch of medications here, the antiarrhythmic agents, antiplatelet agents, and anticoagulants, statins, immunosuppressive agents. They're talking an exponential rise in toxicity in some of these if you have these drug-to-drug interactions. And we heard about this from Dr. Pierre Corey from the Freedom Fest panel that you were the host of.
Yeah, that we aired just last week. If anyone wants to see that, they just had to go back last week where he laid out how safe ivermectin was. This is what they loved about it. It didn't seem to have cross-reactions. You didn't even have to look it up. There was no list of cross-reactions with other drugs, whereas Paxlovid, and we're not just talking about some, like, fringe drugs. We're talking about statins, heart, you know, blood. I mean, these are some of the most, you know, ubiquitous drugs used in therapies in the country.
I mean, Del, before this show, I'm going over these headlines. This is one of the most important shows I think we've done. I mean, tens of millions of Americans that are getting a drug that's being doled out like candy at the hospitals are now facing severe drug-to-drug interactions. So you're going to have to talk to your doctor if you're going in and you want this medication, because this is a really big deal. But perhaps one of the most shocking headlines, the most shocking developments, we're talking vaccines, we're talking antivirals. Why are we needing these? Well, we need those because of COVID-19, of SARS-CoV-2. And some of the scientific consensus now is saying that this thing may have emerged or did emerge from a lab in Wuhan, from testing of a lab in Wuhan. So we still don't have the answers to this. And in comes this story out of Boston University. Take a look at this.
All right.
A new and deadly strain of the COVID virus has been created in a Boston University lab.
A new COVID strain that has an 80% kill rate.
The researchers at Boston University were able to combine the spike protein from Omicron with the original strain of the virus that came out of Wuhan in order to create a new chimera strain, which was so deadly that it killed 80% of the humanized mice that they were testing on.
Researchers compared original COVID, Omicron, and a combined version of the two to see what piece of the virus dictates how sick a person can get. Then they tested this with large amounts of virus in mice.
But the school says these reports are sensationalized and taken out of context.
They also say this research will provide a public benefit by leading to better targeted therapeutic interventions, which, if you remember, was the premise behind the original gain-of-function research.
They enhanced the virus. This is clearly gain-of-function research.
The National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases says BU should have reported this study to them, and it didn't. But BU says it didn't have to because the primary funds for the study was Boston University money.
We can't keep on kind of fooling with viruses and make them more deadly. It has to be done very, very carefully.
I mean, this term gain of function, no one had really paid attention to it unless you were geeking out a few years ago, but it really has been in the limelight. Or, you know, is this virus out of Wuhan? Did it come from a gain of function in a, you know, a bio laboratory? Did it get accidentally released and then, you know, sweep the world? Now, you know, we have said that this potential bioweapon, if you will, didn't really have a very high death rate, as we pointed out earlier in the show when we're mandating vaccines, but it did sweep the world, and it does have the world asking, should we be doing this kind of research?
Right, and we know about this because the NIH, National Institutes of Health, Anthony Fauci's NIH, was funding EcoHealth Alliance. This is Peter Daszak's organization that was working with the Wuhan Institute of Virology to do these gain-of-function research.
Right.
And as we reported just a couple weeks ago, all over the headlines, it was showing that the NIH is still funding grants to EcoHealth Alliance
right.
up to 2022 to the tune of over $1 million in the past 2 years as well. So this is still happening. And so this.
And I remember Fauci's argument was, well, look, yes, while we are investigating, you know, the gain of function, you know, work done by EcoHealth, what we're funding now isn't gain of function. It's just totally something different. So don't worry about it. We can still fund the same companies that are under investigation for other things. But this points out a serious problem in that thinking, right?
Yeah, it does. And so this brings us to the Boston University controversy. This is the headlines coming out now. If you look at these, it says Boston University researchers claim to have developed new, more lethal COVID strain in lab. And let's look. Was it secretive? No, they actually did a preprint article. So it's not peer reviewed yet, but they published their findings. So people are look at this and going, wait a minute, this looks like gain of function. So let's look at that preprint article right now. And one of the most important things I think about this is down at the funding, down at the bottom. And it says here, this work was supported by Boston University startup funds, National Institutes of Health, NIAID grants. You can see two of those there.
That's Tony Fauci, NIAID. It's what he's the head of.
Yep. And then you go right to that bottom line. It says NIHSIG grants. Now, this is for instrumentation, but it does show that they were funding that. There was funding involved in that. And since they were funding that, it should have went through a framework that was created to analyze if they can actually do this type of research. So were they aware of it? Well, we go to Stat News now, and Stat News did some reporting to talk about this, and they actually talked to people from NIAID. This was the headline, Boston University research testing of lab-made version of COVID virus draws government scrutiny. And it says here, it has become apparent that the research team did not clear the work with the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which was one of the funders of the project. The agency indicated it is going to be looking for some answers as to why it first learned of the work through media reports. It goes on to say, Emily Erbelding, director of NIAID's Division of Microbiology and Infectious Diseases, said the BU's team's original grant application did not specify that the scientists wanted to do this precise work, nor did the group make clear that it was doing experiments that might involve enhancing a pathogen of pandemic potential in the progress reports it provided to the NIAID.
I mean, this is exactly the point when Fauci is saying, don't worry about it. We're funding EcoHealth to do something else. Do you know that? I mean, what they're showing you is they have no system to police this thing. Money's being used, and they're just building these, you know, super viruses in universities. It's crazy.
And the researchers are arguing back from Boston University saying it's not gain of function because the original Wuhan strain, the Washington strain, killed 100% of the rats they found. And the Omicron strain killed zero. But when they merged those two, because they took the spike protein from the Omicron, they put it on the Wuhan strain, that only killed 80% of the rats at that point. So they're saying we went from 100% kill rate to only 80%. But if you flip that over, you went from 0% kill rate to 80. So it depends how you're looking at that.
Are they literally arguing that it's not gain of function, it's reduction of function in our laboratory? Therefore, we should be exonerated? Because let's be honest. They didn't know that was going to be the result. They didn't know that it wouldn't, like, triple the original viruses, you know, until it was done. So I don't think, you know, whether the letter of the law, but certainly the intention of the law to say we're going to restrict you is don't do a study where you might accidentally create a super virus that's more deadly than anything we've seen. And then one of you idiots or one of your assistants, that just got into the university, actually carries it out on their sleeve and delivers it to the whole world, which is some version of what we think happened in Wuhan.
Right. And the way it's supposed to work in the U.S., understand that the Obama White House in 2014 said, we got to stop this gain-of-function research. It's getting out of control. It's Wild West. Stop to the MERS, the SARS, and influenza. We're done with it. We're putting a moratorium on it. And it restarted back in 2017. Anthony Fauci was very happy about that. The only reason it restarted is because there was a framework, a very thorough framework, when you read through it, put in place to funnel these potential studies through. And this is the framework right here. It says, a framework for guiding funding decisions about proposed research involving, these are the words, enhanced potential pandemic pathogens. That's to tell you, it's an EPPP. So there, it's supposed to go through a department-level department-level research, basically. They bring people, they bring lawyers in, they bring ethicists in, they bring biosecurity people in. They all sit at a table and they say, can this be done safely? If it can, how do we mitigate the risk to that? None of that was done at the Boston University. They didn't even get a chance to do it. We weren't even sitting at the table to get that done.
Wow. I mean, this is just in the face of, it's just, I mean, this whole day, this whole show, I think people's minds are going to be blown. All of the trust we've had that we're being protected, that things are being done safely, that choices are being made for the right reasons, that the scientific evidence and scientific proof and the scientific method and the leaders of science in the United States of America are handling this all well. And in virtually every case, it's like the Titanic is sinking.
Yeah, and one of the experts that's been very vocal about this is Dr. Richard Ebright. And he was quoted in an article. This is a Daily Mail article that the Boston University researchers were saying was blown out of proportion, because the title here says, this is playing with fire. It could spark a lab-generated pandemic. Experts slam Boston lab where scientists have created a new deadly COVID strain with an 80% kill rate. I mean, in there, Dr. Ebright says, Dr. Ebright told Daily Mail, the research is a clear example of gain-of-function research of concern and enhanced potential pandemic pathogens, that's EPPP research. He says, it is especially concerning that this new U.S. government EPPP research, like the previous U.S. government EPPP research on chimeric SARS-related coronaviruses at Wuhan Institute of Virology that may have caused the pandemic, appears not to have undergone the prior risk-benefit review mandated under U.S. government policies. It's mandated. So now, Del, we have basically Wuhan, China, the Wuhan Institute of Virology in Boston, Massachusetts.
Downtown Boston, we could have the same leak because people are not playing by the rules.
Right.
It's incredible reporting. Jeffrey, we're gonna get back together in just a little while to really talk about the explosive testimony happening at the EU as we speak. At the same time, this unfortunate event has happened at the CDC in the United States of America. Yeah. Virtually the opposite is underway in Europe. We're going to get into those details and what it really, the picture it paints of this moment we find ourselves in. But first, let me talk about, when you've been watching the weather over the last several years, have you heard this term, a bomb cyclone? There's also a media bomb cyclone. We may be watching one today.
We're going to cut it off there because that's where Del Bigtree segues into introducing in his interview, Dr. Joseph Ladapo, and gets back to Jeffrey Jackson. But that was a great interview with Dr. Ladapo on how the COVID shots will not be implemented here in Florida. So that's very encouraging, and wish I had the time to play it. I was tempted to play it, but I don't want to take up too much of the show with too much on this. He's just so good at going fast and hitting home runs of information and conclusions here on the high wire that I encourage you to listen to it every Thursday. Well, if you want to catch it live, there's no audience interaction, but if you want to watch it live, it premieres Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific time. And next we're going to get into, if you'd like to, and by the way, I'll interject, your calls are welcome, 512-248-8252, that's 512-248-8252. And next we'll just play a short clip of Tucker Carlson from October. This is Sam in the control room. This is clip number 3. From October 19th, the CDC complained about his segment on the COVID shots being required for kids to attend school, and he stands by what he said. Here's what his response is. So please play that.
I want to bring you now an update that we think is important on a story we told you about last night. The CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices was on the verge of adding the COVID vaccine to the childhood immunization schedule. That vote is scheduled for tomorrow. Now, as we said, if that vote passes, children will be forced to take the shot they do not need, no scientific basis for requiring it, and the shot that could hurt them. They have to take that shot in order to be educated in the United States in a public school. Well, in response to our segment, the CDC complained on Twitter. They claimed that states and not the CDC established vaccine requirements for school children. But like so much else that we have heard from the CDC, and it pains us to say this, but it's true. Like so much else they have told us over the last 2 years, they're lying. And they know they're lying. More than a dozen states follow the CDC's immunization schedule to set vaccination requirements, not suggestions, requirements for children to be educated. For example, the Virginia Department of Health states that, quote, vaccines must be administered in accordance with the CDC's schedule. The state of Massachusetts says, quote, no student shall attend a preschool, elementary school, or secondary school program without a certificate of immunization documenting that a child has been successfully immunized in accordance with a schedule that was, quote, developed in accordance with the recommendations of the CDC's advisory panel. Tennessee says its immunization requirement, quote, follow the current schedule from the CDC. New Jersey, Vermont, Ohio say virtually the same thing. We could go on. The point is the CDC sets the standard, and then it becomes required across the country. And of course, they know that. Of course, they know that. If they know anything, they know that. So we called the CDC and asked a simple question. Do you deny that once the COVID vaccine is added to the childhood immunization schedule, many schools and states will require it based on your recommendation? And of course, they know that's true. We caught them lying, so they didn't even bother to respond to us because apparently we're not American citizens and don't deserve a response. Does not enhance your faith at all.
So there you hear it from Tucker Carlson, fortunately on Fox News, covering the fact that a lot of states, he just mentioned a few, do require the COVID shots due to the CDC's recommending them on the CDC's childhood schedule. So, those states, except for New York, Mississippi, California, they're really not mandated. Of course, you need to sign an exemption for those other states. Before I get in the next hour, I'll let you know what I'll be covering a presentation in the next hour of how did we know that the COVID shots did not prevent infection or transmission of the virus. We have a lot of news sources, studies back before as they were being released, and government officials who are saying that they don't know whether they prevent transmission or infection. So that compilation you may not have heard anywhere else other than on my Facebook page when I posted it in, 2020. Let me go look at that post here. I was preparing the presentation. December 30th, 2020, I made this post, and I've been updating it, and I'm going to bring it into the context of what I covered on the last week's show, and you probably heard all over the news, especially if you've been listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, is that October 11th, the Pfizer's president of international developed markets, Jeanine Small, admitted in front of the European Union in her testimony that its COVID shot had never been tested before its release to the general public on its ability to prevent the transmission of COVID when asked by Dutch politician and current member of the European Parliament member, or MEP, Rob Roos. And we played that clip on the last show, at the start of the show, if you want to check that out. So want to point out this has been so well known, and the perjury that's been involved, unless she committed perjury, then she's really just the icing on the cake, or the bow on the prize of the present to confirm what we've already known. But it's either negligence or malice that we have the likes of Fauci, Walensky, Francis Collins, who used to head up the NIH, Biden all saying the COVID shots would keep you safe. And we even have an admission from Fauci on the Cuomo show admitting that he knew so much before he contradicted himself and reassured us of what he knew was false. So we'll get into that in the second hour here on Liberation Station Radio Show, the second and final hour is October 23rd, 2022. Stay tuned. Just resistance, isn't living, or just existence. Yeah, you takes a little more.
to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.